Good morning, everybody. Okay. Look, it's with just a couple of preliminary announcements. It's really important to note that with the two art gallery visits coming up, the MoMA and the Met, we have to get there dead on time. We have to, and we have to walk there. So we're going to have to give you specific times when to be where. So watch out for that today.
Yeah.
Wait.
Go here. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is we need to tick
and then the same will apply at the MoMA today too. We'll get $1 each from you, something like that. Now, it's with great pleasure that I, you know, have the opportunity to introduce to you Professor Nick Byrne, who works at the New York University, the NYU, which we saw yesterday. And he's a specialist in Australian literature. I met him in Sydney a couple of years ago. He's just published a book called Contemporary Australian Literature, A World Not Yet Dead. Is that right? A World Not Yet Dead. So that's his particular interest. And he was going to talk to us longer, but we told him that the tutorial is finished.
13-minute sharp. You've got to get to Radio City, which is one of the great places in New York. Incidentally, guest, you know, I think one tips more in this country than any other country I've visited. This is a tipping culture, often of things like waiters and waitresses. Wages are not high, so they really do depend on your tip. So I would tip more than you do in Australia.
Yeah, okay, good.
So in 13 minutes, I'm just going to give you an overview, and thank you very much to Michael and James for inviting me. I'm going to give you an overview of New York in literature and culture. It's interesting, New York today is by far the biggest city in the country. It's the center, as you've seen, of the theater. It's the center of dance. It's the center, in many ways, of literary and publishing culture. It didn't really start out that way. The early centers were Boston, in many ways, and Philadelphia. You notice the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, were in Philadelphia, that many of the great early writers are associated with New England, like Emerson and Hawthorne and Thoreau. New York got a very late start, and one of the reasons it got that late start is we were, as I'm sure you've discovered, we were colonized first by the Dutch and not the English. We were colonized by the Dutch in 1623. And the Dutch ruled here for 41 years. The English conquered in 1664. But the Dutch culture still dominated. And so you had this overlay of languages. The English language got a late start here. The other issue is Boston, founded by Puritans, and Philadelphia, founded by Quakers, had these originally religious foundations, and they had people who were intensely literate and interested in writing, even if it was theological writing, biblical writing, they were very literate in that. Literacy is always transferable. If you could read the Bible or the Quran or so on, you could read anything. And so those cities got early starts because I think of that religious foundation. New York has never, for better or for worse, been a very spiritual place. We've always been pragmatic, concerned with making money, doing business. And so literature isn't the top priority here. This all changes in the 1840s, which is 70 years after the US became independent, when Philadelphia had all the big publishing houses. And in the 1840s, they come to New York, and you have three very great American writers who have the formative years in their career in New York. Three very different writers: Edgar Allan Poe, Herman Melville, and Walt Whitman. And Poe writes The Raven, Poe writes all those great short stories. He's from the South originally, he's from Virginia, he dies in Baltimore, but he writes all his great work in New York, working for the New York papers. Melville, a native New Yorker, more or less, born upstate, but kind of grows up here. He writes all his major work, including Moby Dick, which he wrote on the west side, far west side, slightly southwest of here, in New York. And Walt Whitman of Manhattan, the Sun, as he says, is the great poet who you've read or going to read, is the great poet of New York. And so these three poets really give New York that literary foundation. You also see the cultural institutions beginning. I just went to a concert of the New York Philharmonic yesterday. They began in 1841. The New York Times begins in 1851. And that's when you see these cultural institutions building up. Then the next period, you have the Civil War, which disrupts things a bit. The next big period is the 1870s. In Edith Wharton's novel, The Age of Innocence.
And Edith Wharton was here at this hotel.
And Edith Wharton stayed at this hotel in 1907. And her novel, The Age of Innocence, which is about a man who's choosing between two women, one respectable but not that interesting, the other not respectable but much more interesting, and he's decided to pick the respectable woman over the more enticing but less than respectable woman, and he breaks off with the less than respectable woman in the newly founded Metropolitan Museum, the same museum where you're shortly to go. And all they have at this point is what is called the Cesnola collection, which is still there in the on the second floor, which are Cypriot, ancient Cypriot Greek antiquities, which today are the least interesting thing, but it's all they had. And New York is beginning to build that culture, beginning to become more like a European city. And New York is the one place in the US at that point that approaches the elegance and sophistication of European city. The other thing that happens in New York at this era is all the immigrants come in. All the European immigrants come in through Ellis Island, which is right near the Statue of Liberty. Emma Lazarus, the New York Jewish poet, writes, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." They get sanctuary here. And nearly everybody who comes, whether they're Italians, Jews, Swedes, Poles, Russians, they come through New York. They have that experience of New York. So there's this whole literature of working class life in New York, Stephen Crane's Maggie Girl of the Streets. There are all sorts of people like Khalil Gibran, the great Lebanese poet. He moves to New York, writes there, and then moves back, but he's had that experience. And so the literature of New York, which had been this largely elite literature concerned like Edith Wharton's works are with the Anglo-Dutch aristocracy, takes on the much more kind of Whitmanian democratic tone. Now, something interesting about New York writers is, I am, as I was just saying to Michael, I am a native-born New Yorker. I was born about 10 blocks north of the Metropolitan Museum. I've lived here on and off all my life. That's very rare, actually, for a literary figure in the New York world. Most New York writers have been from somewhere else. And a lot of people who've written great books about New York City have not necessarily been from New York or lived in New York all their life. I don't know if you've read E.B. White's Here Is New York. That's something that people who study New York literature often do. E.B. White wasn't from New York. He was from New England. He came here to work for the New Yorker. He went back to New England. He wrote this great book. A writer like John Dos Passos, who was the great novelist of working class New York in the early 20th century, he's raised somewhere else, comes here, then goes somewhere else. F. Scott Fitzgerald, who you're going to read.
They've read it.
If you read it, The Great Gatsby, it's a wonderful book about New York and Long Island. Scott Fitzgerald spent maybe a year of his life in New York. Scott Fitzgerald has more connections to almost every region of the country, the Midwest, the South, and so on, than he does to New York. But he wrote this great book about New York. You don't really have to be from here to write about it. And New York is very good about accepting people who aren't from New York and legitimizing them as writers about New York. It's very different than London. T.S. Eliot, the great American poet, goes to London and he tries to blend in as much as possible, and it's still not really accepted. But New York will accept anyone. And the New York is becoming a global city in a way it's becoming the global city. You're going to MoMA later today, the Museum of Modern Art, where you have New York embracing the modern. You see that in a poet like Hart Crane, his poems to the Brooklyn Bridge, where he's embracing technology, embracing modernity, embracing abstraction in modern forms, like the Museum of Modern Art did. You have that in the abstract expressionists, who really were painting, and you're gonna see them at MoMA later today, people like Barnett Newman or Jackson Pollock, who are painting at a point where American painting kind of takes over the art world, and they were very conscious of that the torch was being passed to New York. And you're going to read The Catcher in the Rye, which is
They've
a book
it.
You've read it. It's a book totally immersed in New York. And you have that great scene at the jazz club in Greenwich Village. Of course, Holden lives on the west side. You have all the scenes in Central Park, the ducks in Central Park, and you could still go
carousel.
To the carousel. You could still go to the carousel. You could still go to the sailing pond and see that. It's a very site-specific book. And it's interesting because I taught that book last summer in China. It's a book that translates so well. It's a book that whose appeal is so universal. It's about youth and alienation and growing up. But he makes it so site-specific. And you see that New York for Holden Caulfield is a place he could disappear. He could check into that hotel and have his parents not know he's there. And they're not telling on him. They're not telling his parents. And one of the great things about New York, because also one of the bad things about New York, is anonymity. You could just fade in. Nobody knows who you are. And that could lead to alienation and isolation. It could also lead to, you know, getting to be yourself. So there are all sorts of people who come to New York who aren't from there. Today, you very much have, and I'm going to be frank about this, one of the when you are walking around Manhattan, you have to realize Manhattan is an island no longer affordable for writers and artists. I could afford to live in Manhattan only because I live in a building which was originally built by my great uncle, I believe. And my family has legacy rights to its apartment. But without that, I'd have to live in Brooklyn, where most of the artists and intellectuals are. And because of the fact that everybody from all over the world, Russians, Chinese, Brazilians, are buying up things here, that the intellectual scene has really passed to Brooklyn, although a lot of the institutions are in Manhattan, and such as my university. So in my university, I often teach students who got up at the time you got up, but they have to live in Brooklyn and take the train and so on. And so they come, they're often exhausted and so on. But the people in Brooklyn today, very few of them were born in Brooklyn. They've come from someplace else to pursue a literary vocation. And so New York is all about people from someplace else coming there and imagining and being allowed to imagine and feeling authentic even though they're not from there. So what we've all been very good at is being inclusive.
We've got to wind up there.
Have a great Radio City. You're going to love it. I've seen some terrible things there, but the building has always overpowered it. It's an absolutely beautiful building. And that section with Radio City and MoMA in the 50s, that's just quintessential New York.
And
that's
one of the hustle and bustle. One of the real spin-offs of meeting Nick this morning is we told him about seeing August Wilson last night, and he said, oh, you've got to go and see Fences.
Yeah.
And I said, is it on somewhere? And
on
it is on.
Street. Yeah.
So we're going to organize a visit there Sunday night to go and see Fences.
Yeah, and the movie theater itself is a part of New York history. So
watch out. We're going to organize a visit there. So thank you very much,
okay.
Nick. Everybody give
terrific.
Him a clap.
Thank you.